Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slamfire Radio, episode 101 for April the 3rd. I'm one of your hosts, Owen Swelling.
I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy.
I'm another one, Trevor Furlott.
And joining us this week as a special guest is Rod Giltaka. Welcome to the show, Rod.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
Rod, in your case, when we use the word special, we actually mean it in the proper context.
Like, yeah.
I'm always getting called that, so it's okay.
Well, yeah, no, when they call it, when they say it about me, they mean it means something entirely different. But in your case, it actually does mean special as in important. So welcome to Slamfire again.
Well, yeah, thank you. You guys are going to make me cry.
Yeah, we're sorry about that.
Hey, I get that a lot.
So, Rod, it has been a while since you've been on. Can you remind the listeners who you are and talk a little bit about your firearms experience and business and whatnot?
I guess I could. I'll make that brief, but I am a Canadian. We'll start it there.
All right, good.
But I'm an instructor for the RCMP Canadian Firearms Program, and I also own a small business on the West Coast called Civil Advantage Firearms Training. And we do the Canadian Firearm Safety Course. We do a variety of other training, including beginner's training and also training for a little bit higher end training for law enforcement and civilians as well. I actually built that business to cater to civilians, because I don't think there's enough of opportunities like that out there. But I also have a YouTube channel as well that in the past I've worked very hard on, not so much recently, but I'm going to get back to it. So, yeah.
Cool. So what's your YouTube channel?
The YouTube channel is the Civil Advantage channel. So if you just go to YouTube, type in Civil Advantage in the search bar, that should take you right there.
Cool. Very nice.
All right. So we're going to jump into what we did with guns. Rod, as the guest, would you like to go first?
Sure. I guess, you know, a lot of time from what I've heard from previous episodes of Slamfire Radio, it's usually competition stuff. And I thought about it beforehand. I thought this might be an interesting story. So the first thing is, I did teach a Canadian firearm safety course this past weekend. It was a pretty light class. So I ran 12 people through the course, both restricted and non-restricted. So there's 12 more of us circulating around out there.
That's awesome. Good.
at least at some point. I mentioned this actually in my videos. I think that was around 1,300 people that I've run through in the last 5 years.
Wow.
So. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's fantastic. We need more of you people to get more of us people.
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty cool.
And when I sent Trevor? An email asking if I could become an instructor, they said, no, we're not looking for anybody right now.
Oh.
Send us your resume, but we're not recruiting anybody right now. Different philosophy out here. The more people they have, the more classes they can put on, but that would mean more licenses. Got to keep, keep it slow.
Yeah,
take it easy.
In British Columbia and the Yukon, that's our region for the Firearm Center, it's my understanding, we have around 300 instructors.
Wow.
And, you know, the busier instructors, I guess like myself, you know, we don't want there to be 600 instructors. It might be perceived as good, but you're also going to have people that are going, well, I'm not going to do it to teach two people all weekend, right? And then of course, you got people running it. You know, I actually even heard a story that someone had run it out of a motorhome in the Canadian Tire parking lot.
Wow.
Huh. Can you imagine Justin Trudeau, right? Before you know it, there'll be gun classes in the Canadian Tire parking lot. But anyway, that was just kind of an aside. But the interesting thing is, right after we're done here, I'm going to be taking a couple of new guns to the range to test out. And that's a couple of GSG 1911s that I bought. And the reason I bought those small caliber guns is because one of them I bought for my daughter. I bought her a pink GSG 1911 and 22 long rifle for her 16th birthday.
Nice.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. And the reason why I thought I'd mention it is, I've told a few people, you know, that that's what I was going to give her for her 16th birthday. So of course you get some mixed responses out there. But the reason I decided to do that is that I had a talk with her long before her 16th birthday. I said, here's my idea, what I want to get you for your birthday. But part of it is we will actually train together. I want to train you in combat stress management, you know, combat pistol type, you know, it's a combat pistol type shooting, sport, and, full training that I would train anybody else. And she thought that would be a great idea. So we agreed, and that's what she got for her birthday. And she's got a holster and magazine holders and a recovery pouch and all that stuff. And I think that it was the reason why I did it was I think it's a great thing for a young woman to learn those types of skills, because when you operate a firearm, you learn respect for power. You learn accountability because you're having to operate this firearm. Fine, it's not a full caliber firearm, but it's still a deadly weapon. And I think that builds character, and it builds that you just build your responsibility, right? As a firearm owner, I've become far more responsible in my life than before I was a firearm owner. So I think that'll be a great thing for her. And think of how less likely she'll be as she grows up to let other people run her life.
Exactly. You know? And we've talked about that before, how just being the you know, just merely being an owner of a firearm really changes your life. Like, just, and it's for the better. Oftentimes it's, you know, you're not only more responsible because now you've gone through a training course and now you understand that firearms are deadly weapons and, you know, all that sort of thing. But on top of that, you've always got in the back of your mind, especially up here in Canada, well, if I screw up and do something stupid like punch that guy out, you know, because he, you know, called me a name, I'm going to lose all my guns. Mm-hmm. And so you, on top of, you know, being the polite Canadians we are anyway, the gun owners are even more polite because we're scared the government's going to take our guns away for any little infraction that we happen to get ourselves into.
True.
Question, Rod.
Mm-hmm.
Why the GSGs?
I don't have that much money, man.
All right.
I can barely support my own habits.
There you go.
So.
The GSGs are pretty good little pistols. I know, yeah. Owen has one and Trevor's had one.
Yeah.
They seem to run all right.
Mine took about 1,000 rounds of premium CCI, like Stinger and Mini Mags, before it was broken in, and then I could put anything through it without any hiccups. But the first 1,000 were – the first 1,000, it wouldn't take bulk ammo. So I put 1,000 rounds through it of premium stuff, and then it was no problem.
Well, that's interesting. So I didn't mean to take over the whole thing with the GSG thing, but
I brought it up. Go for it.
Yeah, so I bought one in black for myself, and then my daughter has hers in pink. And I haven't shot hers yet, but I did take mine to the range, I don't know, about a week ago. And I'm using Remington Thunderbolt 22, you know, the green box?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's round nose, so that's good for these semi-auto pistols. And
well, for 1911s in general, really. I mean, let's be honest here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I bought 10 mags. I tend to overdo it a little. And I shot, I think I shot 80 rounds before I had one malfunction right out of the box.
That's good. That's really good.
That's not bad. Yeah.
I shot some of that ammo that you're talking about just recently. I got a new rifle and I needed to test with different types of ammunition to see what it grouped best with. And that's a particularly hot round. I mean, it's not as hot as, you know, a Velociter or a Stinger or whatever, but it's a 40 grain bullet pushing, you know, 1250 for feet per second, which is quick.
For 40, yeah.
Yeah. So, awesome. You know, the round nose combined with the extra oomph there in that cartridge probably really helps cycle that 1911 and keep it going well.
Mm-hmm. So far, so good.
Awesome.
Yep.
Anything
okay,
else?
Is that it?
Yeah, I think I've capitalized on the airtime as it is. Yep.
Oh, you haven't heard right Trevor now. Yet, so you should get all your words in now before it's too late.
Okay.
It looks like a short
and go.
This week.
it only looks short, Owen, let me tell you, buddy.
Oh.
Those are just talking points, you know, to keep me going in the right direction. Got out to the range on Tuesday with fellow teacher gun nut buddy friend of mine with my new Model 29 and my SIG P320. I ordered the large size full frame for it. When you buy these P320s, they come with a medium grip, and I thought it kind of felt a little small, especially compared to my double stack 2011. So I ordered the large frame, and sure enough, it does feel a little bit better. So I got out and I shot those two guns, plus John brought out a new to him Lee Enfield jungle carbine that he hadn't shot yet.
Pardon? So what?
Jungle carbine.
What?
Carbine.
Carbine.
Says you.
Carbine. Is it a combine or a combine that mows down the corn?
Whatever it is, I'm going to run you over with
those jungle carbines are awesome. I used to have one, and of all the Lee Enfields, that's my favorite model. So good on John for getting that.
I would have to say mine would be the Sniper, and then a Long Branch, and then this one. But sure. I would not turn my nose up at one.
Right.
It needs a new flash hider. Somebody knocked the ears off of the front sight.
So somebody sort of butchered it and kind of bubbed it.
Just that. The rest of it looks to be all original.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, first impressions of my Model 29. Let's see.
Ouch. Is that one of the words you're going to...
Yeah. I mean, the
Spit it out. Let's go.
I just don't know where to begin.
Is it the gun you really want to love even though you can't? Is it that kind of a thing?
No, I mean, I still love it. I wanted a Model 29, but I think if I had to do it over again, I would actually hold out for and pay more and get an original one from the early 70s. Something that had the pin barrel, something that had the recessed cylinders. These are basically... I think cheap knockoffs of what they used to make. The wood grip is different. It's small. The gun, for an N size frame revolver, the grip feels too small, and which made it hard to get a handle of and made shooting it a bit challenging. I mean, I've shot the 500 Smith & Wesson, Desert Eagle, and 500 or in 50 Action Express, and this thing beat them all as far as recoil and flipperosity is concerned.
Yeah, back with the flipperosity.
There's mucho flipperosity in this hand cannon, let me tell you. But I don't know.
Remind the listeners who aren't up on their revolver model numbers. What is this?
Right. Okay. So the Model 29 is the blued 44 Magnum. The 629 is the stainless 44 Magnum, and Model 29, I got it in 6.5 inch. You could also get it in 8 3/8, but I chose to get the 6.5 inch.
This is a nice barrel length for a revolver, if you ask me. 8.8 is just too.
It's clown. Yeah. It looks like a clown gun. Yeah, I don't like it at all.
Like the Joker's gun, and you know when he pulls it out in the telescoping barrel. Remember that in the movie? That was that was awesome or terrible, one or the other.
On the end frame, I find that the 6.5 makes sense. It the symmetry is correct. After that, it just looks odd. But, you know, the bluing isn't deep blue. I don't know, guys. Maybe it's because I wanted one for so long and I had this image in my mind. And
your expectations were yay, but there was actually down here nay where you came.
I mean, I'm still never going to get rid of it. It's still awesome, but I don't know. I've got to replace the grip. There's no question. The grip diameter is too small.
You're going to go with wood grip still, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Stick with a nice clay. It's got to look classic. It's got to look like it's supposed to originally.
You heard it here first, folks. Trevor is putting wood on a gun.
Keeping wood on a gun.
Well, technically, yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. It was funny my way.
It really was.
It's true. No, I will not be putting a Hogue rubber grip on this thing, that's for sure. But it's a handful. It was I didn't even get through an entire box of ammo. I left 6 in the box when I went home.
So how many did you shoot then?
Well, Matthew, what's 50 minus 6?
I wanted you to say it.
Me can't do math.
It was funny because that was one of the first things he said when he called me up. I shot 44 rounds out of my 44 Magnum.
Oh, yeah. That was the joke. Sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. Yeah, carry on. Don't mind me.
I get what you were going for there. My bad. Sometimes, you can set the hook, or not set the hook, but
I didn't set the hook on that one. Yeah, you, no. Yeah, it was terrible. So, I'm sorry. Let's carry on.
Anyway, that's all I really have to say about it. It's yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, what else did you do then?
What else did I do? I finished up my review on the SR9, so I'll see if I can whip through that here pretty quickly. So the overall impressions of the gun and how the slider laid out, like overall, very small, very compact, and very lightweight when comparing it to the other polymer striker fire pistols that I've been buying recently. It's narrow. The slide is 25.17 millimeters wide. So it's not significantly smaller than a Glock, but it is narrower than a Glock. There's no two ways about it. It's light. It weighs in at 730 grams or 25.7 ounces. If you compare that to the Glock's 746 grams or 26.3 ounces. You know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually is a perceivable difference.
You can feel the difference. Yeah, I remember hefting them both when I owned both of them here, and yeah, the Glock is definitely heavier.
And then if you compare the SR9 with the Sig P320, that gun weighs 817 grams or 28.8 ounces. So 817 versus 730, there's some significant changes there. And just everything about the SR9 is smaller and more compact than all of the other polymer pistols that I bought. It has a very low bore axis. It's more and a more pronounced beaver tail than the Glock, so you can really get your hand in deep into the grip. It's similar to the beaver tail on an M&P as opposed to on a Glock. The Glock is good, but the SR9, you actually get your hand up in there higher still. Serrations are only in the back of the slide.
That was one thing that bothered me on it. I like the serrations up front too.
Yeah, and they're not even all the way to the back of the slide.
No,
because the safety is there. Maybe I don't know, but they're kind of the serrations are lined up with the grip. They don't go past the back of the grip at all. They're fairly aggressive though, but they're not extensive. The gun comes with 3-dot white sights. The front sight is nice. It's has a nice size front dot. The rear notch, however, I find is very narrow, and the rear white dots are very small compared to the front dot, which maybe some people might like because it offers a certain amount of contrast where the front sight dot is large and the rear sights, the dots are quite a bit smaller. I blacked them out. My competition pistols usually have a fiber optic on the front and blacked out rear sight. And so I blacked out my M&P rear dots, I blacked out my FNS rear dots, and I blacked out the Ruger too, and I like it better that way. So the rear sight, however, has built-in elevation. Of all the pistols I bought this year, this is the only one that has any kind of adjustable sights whatsoever. And it's the cheapest of all the guns I bought, and that's a feature that's not on any of the other ones. As far as windage is concerned, you just drift your front sight in the dovetail and adjust it that way. But it's really nice to have that adjustable rear sight. I like to adjust my pistols for point of aim, point of impact at a particular distance, and it's easier to do when you have an adjustable rear sight.
Yep.
Slide lock is low profile, like everything else in the gun, but it's in a decent location. Even for my little hobbit thumbs, I can activate the slide lock without having to manipulate my grip. Ambidextrous controls are also a nice feature on a gun of this price. The safety is ambi. The external safety is ambi. The mag release is ambi, but the slide lock is not. But that's all right. Not very many pistols do have an ambidextrous slide lock, but at least it has an ambidextrous magazine release. But that being said, the ambidextrous magazine release does not work for my hand. Twice on the initial trip to the range under recoil, my middle finger on my strong hand engaged the magazine release and the mag dropped out of the gun.
Yeah, that's never good.
That's not a desirable feature.
No, not a good feature.
So this gun, if this was my only pistol, and if it was a carry pistol or even a competition pistol, I would deactivate that side or remove it altogether. You just can't have that happening. So, but it's not. It's just a plinker. It's just an extra gun for the collection for people to try at the range. So it'll stay as is, especially if I get a southpaw out there.
Yep.
what else? It has a loaded chamber indicator that can be seen from outer space.
It is massive, isn't it? It is huge. It's obnoxious.
Yeah, it is obnoxious. It really is. This is the most lawyer-friendly gun I've ever seen. Rod, have you had much experience with the SR9?
Never shot one, ever.
Okay, great little gun. As far as safeties go, well, yeah, let's see, you've got that chamber indicator that you can see from space. It's both red and the words loaded when up are printed on it, practically in Braille. It has a drop safety, a firing pin safety, an external safety, and a trigger safety.
And a magazine
and
disconnect.
A magazine disconnect. Is there another safety? Oh, it doesn't have a grip safety. That's the only safety
that's
I know.
If it had that would have been like the epitome of the safest gun ever, unless loaded.
Silly. Yeah. So.
Sounds like it would be coalition approved.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The texture on the grip is kind of subtle, but it is. There are no finger grooves.
Subtle is an interesting word. Yeah, I called it weak, I think. It's terrible.
I'm trying to be politically correct.
I think was another word I would have used.
I'm trying to be.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's the grip texture is subtle, or some prefer the term weak. It's not extensive. It's not all throughout the pistol. It's just on the side panels. It is on the front and rear back straps, which is cool. Front of the grip. And the back strap is soft rubber. And reversible. You can either go with a flat mainspring housing or an arched mainspring housing. It's not actually a mainspring, but you can liken it to the mainspring housing of a 1911, where you can get some with flat or arched. So I run it on the arched because I like that aspect. I like my, you know, I run an arched on my 2011 and to make it similar to a Glock, because Glock grip angle does actually fit me well.
Yeah, I found the same thing. I started off shooting it with the flat back, and after a while, I didn't like it. I flipped it around just to see, and it made it a whole new gun, and I performed much better with it the other way.
Yeah, I remember us doing that in Woodstock that time when we were shooting. Yeah, and it just seems to fit my hand better that way. So
cool.
What else we got here? The grip angle itself is quite similar to a 1911, actually, which is good because it keeps it, you know, in the same kind of muscle memory as my 2011. The mag releases. They're ambidextrous, and they're quite small, but they stick out enough that I can get to them with my small thumbs without too much effort, without breaking my grip. The mag well is fairly open, unlike the Steyr, but nothing like the FNS.
Right.
The mags are those typical California-Canadian mags where it's part metal tube and part really exaggerated plastic base plate to make up the fact that it only holds 10 rounds. And the trigger, I'm very impressed with the trigger. The trigger is excellent. One of the criticisms I had of the SR9, the only one that I handled before this one was yours, Matthew. And you remember I thought that the trigger had a really, really long reset. And the only trigger, it's in the top three of all of the guns that I have as far as, all of my polymer striker fired guns as far as triggers go. The trigger safety design itself is excellent. It works better than the trigger safety on the Glock. It's a better design. The shoe is similar to the Glock, but I'd say it's a bit – the plastic has a different texture, a different feel. It's a harder plastic than that of the Glock, and it's also very square. So, if you're picky about how a trigger shoe feels on your finger, I don't mind it, but it's very – I'll describe it as, you know, blocky and square. Let's see, light trigger pull and more of a rolling break, certainly more of a rolling break than the Glock, but it's very light. I'd like to get a trigger scale on it compared to all of the other guns here, even the SIG. It's light. Like if it's 5 pounds, it's just barely 5 pounds. Rolling
Matt's
break.
Was that way?
What's Pardon? That?
Matt's trigger was borderline. Maybe that was from shooting it, but.
Yeah, mine was borderline 5 pounds. I remember being at a level 3 and being very nervous while they tested my trigger.
I think it was the kind of thing the guy tested it and kind of gave you a raised eyebrow.
Yeah.
Hey, the weight just has to come off the table. It doesn't say it has to come off the table more than a millimeter.
It came off the table just high enough to pull a piece of paper out from under the weight is what he ended up having to do.
That's as close as you can get.
Yep.
So the reset is very, it's very short, maybe a medium length reset. very similar to the Glock. Very, very similar. The reset's more pronounced than the M&P, but not quite as sharp as the Glock, but I still like how it feels. And it's kind of to be expected with a rolling break. It's not going to have a really strong pronounced reset if it doesn't have a really strong break. It doesn't have that quote-unquote glass rod feel. So as far as takedown of the SR9 is concerned, the field strip is kind of similar to a 1911 in that you have to remove a takedown pin, and then the slide comes off. Lock the slide back, push the takedown pin out from the left to the right, or from the right side to the left, and then move the slide forward, and off it comes. Still very simple. It's not something that requires a great deal of effort to figure out on your own. The detail strip of the gun is very similar to the Glock. The internals of this gun are closer to the Glock than any other one I have here, including the M&P. I've not gotten my hands on a SDVE9 or an old, what was the complete knockoff of the Glock? The Sigma. I've never seen inside a Sigma, but this is awfully darn close to a Glock. You've got that external safety to deal with, but other than that, it's really like taking apart a Glock. So if you can work on a Glock, you can certainly work on this thing. The pins, unlike the Glock, they do need to be drifted out with a punch and a hammer. But other than that, takedown is very similar to a Glock. Let's see. Some of the concerns I have, the rear notch. This rear sight notch is quite narrow. And, of course, it has an external safety. Yuck. And ambi mag release may cause you problems. If you could shoot it before buying it, that would always be great. But if you bought it and it was the only gun you had, I'm sure you could work around that magazine release by deactivating it. Pros, outstanding value. The fit and finish of this gun are great. They're as nice as any of the other ones that I have, and, you know. And I got this delivered for $425, and it was new in box condition. It wasn't new, but he said he put 200 rounds through it. It didn't look fired at all. There's no wear on it whatsoever. So really impressed. Another thing, the Ruger SR9 aftermarket support is out there for it. I don't know any pistol that has as much aftermarket support available as the Glock does, but this one, you know, Ghost is making aftermarket connectors for it. There are other recoil springs available for it. What else, Matthew? Anybody making sights?
Not that I know of.
No. Holsters. There's lots of holsters on the market for it.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I didn't really look into the aftermarket availability because I shot it in production, so I didn't put anything aftermarket into mine. So.
Yeah. But you are aware that there is the recoil, the extra recoil springs, were they factory or the aftermarket?
The ones that I had were aftermarket.
Okay.
So there was the recoil spring, and there was I think there was a lighter connector.
Mm-hmm.
You could get the Ghost.
Probably, yeah.
And yeah, other than that, I'm not. I think you can get. You could also get a heavier. They called it the concealed carry or CCW firing pin spring. They said it made the firing pin hit harder, and so you would not have to worry about like primer strikes, but that may have been marketing more than anything else, because I never experienced any sort of problems with that.
No, Glock does that too, though, where you can, you know, when you put a trigger spring kit into a Glock, that's one of the things you change is the striker spring.
Yeah.
When you, these strikers, right, you're cocking them like you're cocking a hammer, and when you pull the trigger, you've got to compress the striker spring.
Yep.
So if that striker spring is reduced, you're going to reduce your overall trigger pull. The only problem is
light primer strikes.
Yeah. Yep. So, well, that's it for me, Owen. Thank you for indulging me, gentlemen.
Matthew.
Yes, sir.
What did you do?
What did I do? Let's see. Didn't really do much. I've got kind of something I want to talk about. The Buckmark rifle that I have, the carbine here, the pistol carbine. I still have it, but I haven't shot it really since I talked about it last time on the show. It just doesn't fit my needs or my wants either, for that matter. So I was wondering if any listeners wanted to trade guns with me. And here's sort of the idea behind this. I really like doing video reviews for my YouTube channel. And so I thought, what a great way to just be able to get access to a bunch of...
They're not as good as Rod's. I'm just...
No, they're not.
Somebody
Rod's
has to tell you.
I mean, Rod's a professional, so...
Rod can make a Norinco sound like a Kimber.
Yes.
He really can. Like, Rod's the only reason why I've ever entertained buying a Norinco firearm.
Because we all know Trevor and Norinco don't get along so well. So
just because one blew up in Muffin's face doesn't
what?
Mean
not. That's nothing. That's minor feature. So anyway, the idea was this: if you have an interesting, I don't want a 10/22. I don't want a Remington 700. I want a unique.
I want your gun, but I'm going to be picky about it.
That, very much so. I mean, I'm trading them, right? It's not like. Not like I'm just, asking for one. So I will send you, it's a $700 gun, and so I would look for something similar in value. But I want it to be interesting. I want it to be maybe a little unique or rare or just, something off the beaten path. And then, of course, when I receive it, I'll have a look at it and shoot it and have some fun with it and do a video review of it. And then it'll be back up on the block, and we'll swap again for something else. And we'll just kind of see how long that goes and... I don't know, might be a good way for some listeners to try out some different guns and also for me to try out some different guns. So
is your plan to trade out the Buckmark and then get it back and then trade it out again? Or
No.
So whatever comes in,
is
going to be available for trade next.
That's right.
What if you get something like you absolutely love and don't want to get rid of?
Well, therein lies the problem that I don't really care about, and I will stop this project immediately and keep the gun.
All right.
Does that answer your question?
At least he's
honest. More or less.
Cool. So any listeners out there, you got something interesting you want to, send me an email, send the show an email, contact me on Facebook, however you want to contact me, I don't care. Let me know, and let's see what we can do. Other than that, I bought another 2,200 rounds of 22 ammo, and that was basically it.
About another 2,200 rounds?
Yes. I just wanted to make it sound like I bought another rifle, but then wanted to dig at the Americans by saying, no, it was really just another 2,200 rounds of 22 ammo that I just kind of picked up at my local Walmart as I drove by one day, just because I was like, I should stop in and see if they have anything.
Yeah, funny, because I did that this week, too, except I bought about 2,500 rounds.
Oh, nice. Good for you.
Place. So, just for fun.
Yeah. I mean, something to plink off in the afternoon when you're bored, kind of thing.
Supplies were getting low. Yeah. I was down below 8,000, and I don't like dropping below 8,000 rounds.
Oh, see, if I was at 8,000 rounds, I would be breaking down. Like I would have
You'd be panic buying at that point.
I would have been panicked, flat out panicked. Let's just say I was below my comfort level, but yes. I'm back up to a comfort level where I'll be okay for probably a week.
Yes, that's all I did this week was buy ammo. So,
what kind of ammo did you get?
I bought the Winchester 555. Like I say, I bought the 22, and I bought another 100 rounds of 308.
Okay, cool. You have the 555 stuff in your area. I could only find. I mean, it's the same ammo. I just bought mine in two 22 boxes.
Well, this I think I got the last five.
Yeah.
in the area.
Right.
It was at the Green Diamond.
Oh, okay.
It was a little pricier than I normally would pay.
Oh my goodness! It shot up here too.
Yeah, and it's going to go up again, I think, because of the dollar.
Yeah, yeah. I went to my local Pro Nature gun shop there, and a couple weeks ago, and picked up some CCI Blazer 50 round box kind of thing, and it was $359. I went back 2 weeks later and got some more. I didn't check the price till I got home. $559 in 2 weeks. It shot up $2 for 50 rounds.
I asked the guy there about the price, and it's going to be over $30 a box. And he gave it to me for the old price, but that still was like $27.
It's going to be over $30 a box for 500 rounds. It makes me sick. Oh, like sick to my stomach. Like, can't believe it's getting that expensive.
You know what? It's like gasoline. It only goes in one direction.
I know. Exactly. I know. That's why I try to buy it as often as I can, because the way I see it, I mean, I've got ammo here still from, a couple of years ago when I bought the 555 round box for like $19.95.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember ever paying that little. $24.99, I think, is when I got in.
Yeah. Yeah. And, to think that it's almost, well, it hasn't quite doubled in price, but it has gone up significantly.
Primers. Luke Giroux was shopping at Green Diamond for primers for me yesterday, and they were $50 a box.
Yeesh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's getting pretty ridiculous.
Pretty ridiculous at 6 cents a pull, Matthew?
Yes, that's not what I'm used to. I'm used to 3 cents a pull or 4 cents a pull. Six is getting expensive. I know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Rod, you have to understand, Matthew's ancestors invented copper wire by fighting over a penny.
That was pretty slick. That was better than your earlier
cheap
material.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not all
gone through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crazy.
That's why I'm building an AR in 7.62.
At least that ammo is still fairly cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even that, Matthew, I saw a crate the other day that I used to pay $244 is now $280 at this particular store anyway.
Yeah.
So, but God love Canon ammo. They're still doing right by us.
Yeah. I concur.
Cool.
All right. Well, if that's all for that, then let's move on to some upcoming events. We have the 5th annual charity shoot coming up on June 27th, with all proceeds are going toward the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. Up in the, that's in the Restigouche area, in the Dalhousie area.
Correct, Amundo.
And the para course with Tommy Nelson is July 3rd, followed by an IDPA mini match the next day. The course is full, but come out for the mini match.
And the invitation letter, sorry, Owen, the invitation letter is now ready to go, Matthew.
For the charity shoot.
Yeah. Oh, right. Different event.
Yeah.
We got on to Tommy too quickly.
Yeah, we got to do.
Sorry.
We got to make one for the para, make one for Summer. Oh, no, SummerSlam.
Para's ready. Para's ready.
Okay.
I sent para out to Brian already, and he passed it on to Jay. So okay. Para's ready. We just got to get it posted.
Yeah, okay. And then we also need one for the Daniel Shaw course, too.
Right. I'm just changing the dates on the ones we had last year as well.
That's cool. Why isn't the Daniel Shaw course listed here?
Because we...
Oh, because it's full.
Yeah. It was. We never even get to advertise
it. We never advertised it. That's right. Never mind. That was a secret. Sorry, listeners. You didn't get in on that. We're having Daniel Shaw back this year.
Are we done all the behind the scenes? Are we done all the behind the scenes discussion here that we normally should be doing after the show?
No. This is fine. We're good.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring Rod into the conversation.
Okay.
Rod, you're a trainer and instructor. Generally, I imagine you do all your courses in-house at your own range and stuff, or your, maybe not your personal range, but the range that you operate out of. But do you travel, and or would you travel?
That's a tough one. I prefer not to. I've been in business development for about 11 years, and I used to travel every 2 weeks to the United States for a couple of 3 days. And travel to me is not exciting.
No, it becomes a job unto itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's hell on earth.
Yeah.
Well, there you go then. So you're not invited. All right.
I think where
well, I certainly would drive.
Trevor, I think where you were going with this was maybe if he would be interested in holding a course, you know, once a year or something.
Yeah, we would have him come out and do a class. I mean, we've had, you know, we bring instructors, Rod, from both sides of the border to my gun club and Slamfire Radio hosts them to put on training clinics. And we're always, you know, all about the training. And so, you know, in Eastern Canada, there's a few guys in Ontario and whatnot, but yeah, we're always trying to keep our options open, get in new instructors and keep it fresh. So, but maybe, I need to go out and see you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to entertain something like that. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Moving on here a little bit. SummerSlam, August 8th and 9th. Registration is open. On the Restigouche Gun Club website.
Just an update on that, Owen. There are 30 spots left.
30 spots left, so they're going fast because I think there was 50 last week.
Yeah, registration opened up on the 9th of March, and there's only 30 places left. Yeah. Also, just something else that I'll mention, the Hampton Southern New Brunswick 250 match, that's a level 3 all shot in 1 day, 250 rounds, 16 or 18 stages. Matthew and I went to it last year. It was a blast. Registration just opened up for that today, and they're only taking 50 people. So if you're a listener of the show and you're in our area and want to attend and didn't get word yet, I predict it'll be sold out in a week, if that.
Yeah. All right. The NFA AGM is May 23rd, 24th at Quebec City. So if you're within driving distance of Quebec City, that might be something to consider. And the CSSA AGM, starting at 10 o'clock on May the 30th, and that's in Ottawa at the Conference Center, Conference and Event Center there. One-Shot Tactical Ontario IDPA Provincial Championship. This was sent in, I believe, by a listener. Tier 2 will be held on August 15th at 9 o'clock. And you can go to www.2015opc.com. There's a bunch more information on that event there. So we're going to jump right to the main topic. And are we doing news first?
I don't know if we have any news or any specific NFA discuss. Well, there is some news, but we're going to talk about the main topic, and that's Bill C-42. Well, as far as there was an NFA update, sort of, kind of, and maybe, I don't know, Rod, how closely you're following it. The NFA made the news. CBC was reporting on the fact that the NFA Facebook page was deleting comments and banning members for asking questions. It actually made it to CBC.
Huh. Wow. Is that a milestone? I don't know.
It's a something.
It's a something. You know what they say? If you want to know who rules over you, find out who you're not allowed to criticize.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that was for me. That was it. That was my final. I'm out. I'm done. I'm not going to the AGM. I let Andrew know, and I was supposed to get trained to be a facilitator for the NFA field officer class. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good. Thanks, guys.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. I don't. I think it'll probably get worse before it gets better. But anyway, so that does kind of take us into the main topic, which is the reason why you're here, Rod. And you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about stuff and things and all that good stuff. And we kind of beat around the idea of, as a lot of people are right now, the idea of a third or at least new Firearms Association for Canada and what that might look like and what it might mean for us and what they could do. So why don't, and actually, sorry, I need to backtrack. And if Matthew would edit, this would be so much better. And
I'm not going to.
I know. I wouldn't look like a putz right now. So
yeah.
Before, Rod, before we talk about another organization in Canada, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's been happening with Bill C-42 and where we're at with that, and just kind of keep it light, touch upon that a little bit for us, if you would.
Well, I think Bill C-42 went through its second reading today. I think Matthew's actually more up to date on what happened today than I am.
It'll still be cooler if you say it.
I concur.
Well, what did happen, Matthew?
They read it again in Parliament.
Exactly. So it's making its way through, I guess.
Did you watch any of the debate?
Not this second round, for a number of reasons. Probably chief among them is I had a lot of things to accomplish and I couldn't go without sleep for two nights, lying in my bed angry, at the direction that Canada has been going. So I probably avoided it. That was one of the reasons why I avoided it. But, it seems like the Conservatives are making some commitment at least to get it pushed through, which even though it's as a friend of mine used to call things a nothing burger, there's a couple of things that would be handy for us, so I would like to see it get through.
During the first debate, I heard one of the members from Quebec talk about no one wants to go moose hunting with an AK-47 and cut the moose in half.
They didn't ask me, now did they?
No. That's right. So apparently a banana clip, Matthew, is not for cutting a man in half, it's for cutting a moose in half.
Now we know.
Now we know, because a politician said so. And somebody referred to the Swiss Arms as an automatic. Yeah, yeah. So much fail.
Well, I mean, that's what they're. It's the Liberals and it's the opposition. They're both very left-wing parties, and they believe their own spin. They believe what the media tells them, and that's all they have to go on. And they will twist things, I think, and they will. I think that was an intentional.
I believe it was intentional, and I don't believe they believe it. I believe they believe in its effectiveness.
Right, yes.
If it's coming from me, Joe in the street will believe it to be true.
Yep.
So that's why I exaggerate, and that's why I use incorrect terminology, because it's more effective.
Yep.
You know, the truth can sometimes be boring, right?
That's it.
So, Rod, what do you think is coming back to the nothing burger? What do you think will actually improve our lives in Bill C-42, and what do you think is just fluff?
Well, there's a couple of main things in there. For one, one of the aspects of C-42 that I think is going to be really dodgy, really risky for us one way or the other is the RCMP not getting to reclassify firearms on the fly anymore and it being done by the government of the day. I mean, I'm sure that between the four of us, we could debate on whether that's a good thing or not, you know, and all the bright places or the dark places that could take us. But that would be a pretty significant change, based on what happened last year, which is one of the things that propelled me into paying more attention to the political stuff. You know, I think that would be an improvement. At least it would be people that you could vote out of office being doing that stuff, right?
Well, it's an improvement while we have the conservatives in power. If Shiny Pony ever gets in, it's going to be a tragedy.
Well, then Shiny Pony will be a one-term prime minister, you know?
I would hope so. I mean, I would hope that the firearms community has enough clout to be able to do something like that, but do we really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we do, actually. You know, that almost leads, I don't want to short-circuit this topic, but it almost leads into our next topic, is that we do need some kind of something to rally around, something to get that big soft middle of non-gun owning Canadians and the firearm, you know, the majority of firearm owners, which are pretty moderate people, pretty articulate, I think, in some regard. If we could just get a little bit more organized, then we could we would know our measure at least, right? But I don't know. So that might be a good thing. At least the people that would reclassify firearms would be accountable for what they've done or what they would do in the future. So I think that's a bit of an improvement. The not bringing an ATT to the range. Well, that's not going to make my range bag any lighter. I guess one piece of paper lighter.
Yeah.
But
it really doesn't make our lives that much easier, does it? I mean, especially for the provinces that are
issue automatically. Yeah. And Chris Kingston gets one for the term for the length of his license because he's a lifetime member at one range. So he gets his ATT for the length of his license.
Yep.
That's cool. But what about, and do we know, if I want to buy an AR from Matthew and we initiate the transfer, back in the old days when non-restricteds were registered, the transfer was automatically approved and I could take his shotgun and go home with it. Now that ATTs may be gone, will I just be able to buy his AR and take it home with me on the spot once the transfer is approved over the phone? Or am I still going to have to wait for something? Like, what's going on with ATTs in that respect to transfers between individuals?
Well, it's not gone, right? It still exists, but it's going to be combined with the license. So it does exist somewhere. And you know, I'm not an expert on C-42, because I forget stuff as quick as I read it, but in one
really
eye out the other.
For a spot on this show.
Yeah, you really should. You'd fit right in.
Well, I planted that in there as kind of a resume item, but anyway, we can talk about that after. but you know, I'm, if I'm not mistaken, part of that authorization of transport, improving that process is that we wouldn't need a short-term ATT when purchasing new firearms. I'm pretty sure that's in there because I remember discussing that with someone. And if that's the case, that's a big deal because
it is.
I don't want to go off on a rant, but.
Rant, my friend.
Rant, yes, please.
This is one of the most tedious things. I mean, we've all talked about before that if you really, truly know the Firearms Act and you truly, truly know the firearms regulations in Canada, you can't come to any conclusion other than it's done to frustrate and threaten people basically to the point where they give up their guns. And one of the biggest points is when you buy a new restricted firearm. Here I am with probably no less than 50 guns, including you know, what some people would term fighting rifles. I have ballistic vests. I have magazines. I got thousands of rounds of ammunition. Here's part of my inventory. But yet when I go buy that new GSG for my daughter, I can't take it to the range when I finally get home for 2.5 weeks until I get the actual registration certificate for it. Because my gosh, that would be too dangerous. And if we could just do away with that, I mean, there is absolutely no public safety function.
Yeah,
with
you can
that
take
and,
all the other guns that you have.
Yeah,
but not
oh, yeah.
that one, because that one doesn't have the magical paper yet.
Well, anyway, you guys know what it's all about. It's beyond belief. It makes me lightheaded if I think about it too long, you know. But that would be an improvement for sure.
And even if there was consistency under the current situation, I went to a gentleman's house yesterday. We initiated a transfer for a lower. Both of us were present at the time of the call. I requested a fax to ATT. They won't email them in this province, but they will fax them. And within 21 hours, the fax was coming through the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it has happened in the past, but certainly it is the exception to the rule and not the rule that I get my ATTs to transfer between private individuals within 24 hours.
But even 24 hours is a long time when, you know, you've just bought the gun, you're at buddy's house. Why can't you just take it home?
Yeah.
I mean, you already are classified
to
own.
It's not even a gun. It's not even a gun. It's a lower.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's considered a gun. And even if it was, you know, the whole thing, you're already licensed to own that style firearm, that class firearm. What difference does it make?
Yeah, like, but in other cases, Matthew, I've had to wait upwards of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And one time I requested a fax for them to fax the ATT. They didn't fax it. When I asked why, they said it was because, you didn't provide us with the number. You know I have an authorization of fax on my file, and guess what? That authorization of fax includes my
number.
Right, but I had to provide it because you wouldn't look it up. You had to look up the fact that I had an authorization of fax. And when you do stuff like that, you're just playing games.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to put it. But don't forget, Trevor, it's not over yet. You've got that lower home, but you still, even though you got an authorization to transport to get it home and a temporary notification that the transfer has occurred, you still got to wait another couple of weeks just to go to the range to shoot the stinking thing.
Yep, I got to wait for that.
For what?
For that certificate to come in the mail to put in with my
for
other
what?
Ones.
Yeah.
For nothing.
Public safety.
Bull crap.
Well, just so someone can feel good, just so Wayne Easter has something to cluck about when he jumps up, you know, trying to adjust, anyway. You know what? I shouldn't even have brought him up because now I'm getting angry.
Okay. Well, how about this then? How about we shift gears and we talk about your true purpose for being on the show this evening, and that is to discuss, does Canada need a new Pro Firearms Association advocacy group?
Good question. Am I supposed to provide an answer?
Well,
kind of why you're here.
An opinion.
No. An opinion would be nice. Yeah, that'd work. We start with that.
Yeah, well, just to get things going. You know, Trevor and I did have an interesting discussion a couple of weeks ago. And I think based on our situation, we almost do. I think that we're still really looking around for the organization that's going to really meet our needs. And, you know, I'll be totally honest, you know, in my opinion, because I don't, you know,
I don't represent anybody
it.
Here. You can say whatever you like.
Yeah. Well, the NFA, I got behind the NFA because of No Compromise. And that was about a year ago, right? When the reclassification happened. But I think my definition of No Compromise was different than Sheldon Clare's definition. And, you know, I think that's where over the course of the year, we had a bit of a departure there because, you know, I'm a bit of a realist. And if you're going to, you know, show up in Canada in the Canadian political system and say, I want nothing short of being able, and you guys have heard me say this before, I'm sure, being able to buy a machine gun at the Shoppers Drug Mart with no ID. Anything right. short of that is I don't even want it. And of course, if you want all or nothing, you'll get nothing. So there's an issue there. And then our other alternative, our other realistic alternative is the CSSA. And I always found them to be too far the other side. There's no Goldilocks zone in Canada. So you got the CSSA and Tony and whoever else is involved over there. And they tend to be like, yeah, whatever you're offering, that's great. You've really knocked it out of the park, Minister. Let me give you a back rub. Oh no, you know, I didn't really want any rules that make sense or anything like that. I'm fine to play ball with you guys. And so it was just like too soft on one side and then complete extremism on the other. And I think that leaves a lot of reasonable gun owners out in the cold. They can't take it one way or another. And I will say this though, to provide some balance to those comments is Tony got a bill on the floor, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
He got a bill on the floor with his name on it. So that's, well, you know, figuratively speaking. So I can't criticize them too bad now, can I?
Nope. Well, and the thing is, whether your comments are, you did say they were your opinion, whether or not they're 100% accurate or not when it comes to how the CSSA does it or not, that is our perception. And I think the CSSA needs to do, not damage control, but maybe a public awareness campaign, because a lot of CSSA members and a lot of people in the firearms community think exactly the way you do about the CSSA. We had a listener email in last week criticizing the CSSA for not being in your face enough, for not being in favor of self-defense, for not being in favor of carry. And some comments from people within the CSSA, like quote-unquote field officers and other insiders, were quite critical of his comments and said he needs to get his story straight. And the CSSA is, in fact, in favor of those things. And my reply to that was, well, that's news to me. So if the CSSA is taking that kind of stance, I think they're unfortunately not selling it. They're not promoting it well enough, because most of us jumped on the no compromise movement. I agree with you in the true spirit that it was intended won't function in Canada. However, that logo served as a rallying point for gun owners. We hadn't been that riled up since 95. And back in 95, we didn't have multimedia or social media like we do today to get us organized and get us all communicating as effectively as we do now. But it was a huge movement, and the numbers of NFA members just exploded. And exploded because social media united us all, and that no compromise campaign inspired us and motivated us. And what has the CSSA done to get gun owners that fired up and that united? I don't know. I haven't been around long enough. Maybe they have, but in my short time in this community, I haven't seen them grab the bull by the horns and get gun owners fired up and united. So now here we are with the poop storm going on within the NFA, lawsuits and presidents being called dictators and executive vice presidents being fired, and we're going to court and the CBC's laughing at us, and all of that momentum that we had going is just crushed. So what do? Do we get behind the CSSA and say, you guys need to rally us? Or do we take that energy and that spirit from the NFA and start a new one?
Well, I think, I think that the most important thing is that whether something positive or something negative happens in anything that we do in all our lives, is that we learn something from it. And, you know, I've had my own failures and never looked back. I went, okay, what did I learn? Was this an expensive lesson or was it a cheap lesson? I've learned some expensive ones, by the way. I think the NFA, if leadership in the NFA were really watching and really thinking like you should, you know, when you're even just administering your own life, they should go, okay, this was a very expensive lesson. What did we learn? And I have no idea whether that's going to happen or not. But another lesson might be for people out there looking to start another organization, saying, hey, you know, you've got maybe an organization that I can't emphasize this enough, that got a bill on the floor. So, you know, whether my perception of the CSSA is accurate or not, and I don't know that it is, but it's certainly my perception based on their outreach, because I'm in the community.
Exactly. That's my point.
Absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. So they haven't given a perception to the contrary. And then you have the NFA, and obviously we all know what happened with that. Maybe the lessons that both sides are learning and that we've learned as members of the community is what could go into a third organization. And maybe we can find that Goldilocks, you know, zone. I mean, personally for me, an organization that knows what it wants is important. An organization that recognizes basic human rights. And I'm having a hard time finding that. But the right to defend yourself is a basic human right. Like, the more media, mainstream media I watch, and these, you know, people in Ottawa, these commentators, I don't memorize their names, but, you know, oh, well, we don't use guns to defend ourselves in Canada. And I'm like, holy man,
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Happens all the time.
You know, like it's as if it were the most ridiculous notion. You know, if someone's trying to take your life, you're supposed to just what? Dial 911 with your last breath. You know, just a very interesting idea. But so I don't know. I don't know what that third org looks like. I think is what I'm trying to say. But it would observe our basic human rights. It's something that's important to me, and that it advocates for common sense in laws. Now, does licensing make common sense? Well, we have peer-reviewed studies that say that it doesn't, but intuitively it makes sense to me. Does mandatory safety training make sense? You know, and I'm not a guy that had guns in the early 80s. So I don't have that bitterness that a lot of guys did when they had their everything taken away from them. I can't even imagine what that feels like, but I just don't see how we can move forward in Canada without creating some type of agreement with the, you know, the average Canadian that doesn't own guns, so that, you know where I'm going with that?
I do. I understand what you're saying. Like, what we want and what we can realistically expect are two different things. And we do need to understand that, you know, we're probably not ever going to get rid of licensing in Canada. We're never going to get rid of mandatory safety training. And that is one thing that I actually stand behind. I think mandatory safety training is a fantastic thing and that it actually works. That's why I'm behind it. If you can show me statistical evidence, proof, empirical evidence that a certain law actually works, great. I will take it. But yep, if it doesn't, I don't want it.
Yep. Yeah, laws for the sake of having laws, that works for feel-good legislation and the general masses. But when it affects me and it's there and it just for the sake of being there and it's making my life difficult, no. I don't mind having it there if it actually benefits the majority of society.
Right. Like, yeah. I said, I can't see us getting rid of licensing, mandatory safety training. Those two things, you know, whatever, we'll live with that. But let's get rid of classifications of firearms. Like, that's something that we could work towards and that you could probably sell the public on, because really the mantra would be a gun is a gun. It doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter. It's going to launch a projectile at a high rate of velocity. So why do we need two or three different classifications of them?
Yeah, we don't.
Absolutely.
Let's bring it back to the potential new organization. And what do you think some of the challenges would be faced by a group starting a new organization? Because when we look at what we currently have now, what's one thing they all have in common? They provide us with insurance. And when you ask somebody, when I was an NFA field officer, and I would say, you know, are you a member of the NFA? What's in it for me? Well, they lobby for this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, but I don't. What do I get for my money? They're lobbying for me? I don't see that. I don't feel that. That's not tangible. Well, when laws change, yeah, but they rarely change, blah, blah, blah. People always want to know what's in it for me. What am I getting for my membership? So the NFA and the CSSA, well, they were like, all right. Yeah, I think the CSSA is in bed with Calibers now. So you get your Calibers magazine through the CSSA. The NFA had their own Canadian Firearms Journal. At least that was coming. But both of these associations provide insurance. So if I have two insurance options in Canada and I start up a third organization and they say, well, we offer you insurance, is that going to be enough, do you think?
I don't know that I made a decision to be a member of the NFA over insurance. I made that decision based on just wanting to promote the cause, you know, just support the cause.
Yeah, yeah, for guys like you and I, yes, but right. For the average gun club owner, the FUD, if you will, how do we sell him on this organization? What is you and I and Matthew, like people in the community, we're going to join these things to support the cause. We understand the bigger picture. But the average person that we're trying to talk into joining, the average firearms owner who's not a member of these associations, how are they going to sell themselves to that guy?
Have you had that experience, Trevor, where that was a discussion that you had with somebody? Because I haven't. So
constantly.
Really?
Yeah.
What am I going to get for my money?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. Why should I join the NFA? Why should I join the CSSA? Well, you get insurance. Yeah, but I'm a member of the Rescuers Gun Club, and that membership provides me with NFA insurance. I'm done. Why do I need to become an individual member? What's in it for me?
Interesting. Well, that's experience that you have that I don't have, right? So, you know, that didn't factor in my...
And they say maritimers are cheap. I don't understand where it comes from.
I'm still reeling over that copper wire comment. Yeah, but anyway, I haven't had that. I've never had that conversation because I guess, I mean, you and I and Matthew and Owen and everybody that probably takes the time to listen to this is aware of that bigger picture and aware of where it's going. And $35 or $50 is just not, it's not
it's box
that,
ammo.
Yeah, absolutely. And for what it does on the other side, what it enables us to do is, you know, it has a lot of value. So I don't know that, that insurance would be a part of it if I were to start it, which I'm not, but yeah, I don't know. I think it has to be sold as here's what we intend to do. Here's how we're going to do it. And here's what we've done. And
I think that's a big part of it because if I look at my experience, you know, I've been involved in firearms quite a bit, shorter amount of time than, Trevor and Matthew, but I kind of look at the NFA and the CSSA and I say, okay, I can see what they've done in the progress they've made for where they've been successful because that's a big deal. But I don't see what goes on behind the scenes. I don't see all the work that goes into those small successes. And I think that's a real important aspect for members to see that, you know, I'm sending my $35 off and it's not just going in a bank account somewhere so that a couple people can get paid and there can be some paperwork done. And oh yeah, we talk to politicians once in a while and you know what I mean? The perception, while I know that's not, you know, actually what's happening, but the perception for the average gun owner needs to be these people are working hard and here's all the things they were doing. So that kind of, I don't even like using the word transparency with that, but you know, that kind of information and letting the members know, that's to me, I see that as being one of the biggest steps to getting people on board and keeping people on board.
Yeah, you're right. And it's the proper word for that is communication, right? Just here's what we've done. Here's where we're going. And, you know, in the perfect, you know, I think that we could actually start framing the discussion, you know, what would the perfect organization look like or close to perfect? And for me, it would be an organization that knows what it wants, that it's reasonable, and that you have good, reasonable people running the organization. So, for instance, you know, what if an organization said, listen, for the next 24 months, our goal is no magazine size restrictions, de-restricting the AR, and doing away with the authorizations to transport. And here's our plan to make that happen, and here's what we think we need to do it. And then at least you would know what you're getting and you might have a quarterly update on our goals and what we've accomplished and what we spent on it. And
absolutely.
To me, yeah, I mean, that would be an organization where I go, yeah, I know exactly what's happening with my money. And, you know, turns out here's a list of the MPs that aren't playing ball with us and here's why. And, you know, just some kind of, so it's a little more interactive rather than this, you know, kind of black hole where you throw money. You know, you get some and rhetoric back on a Facebook.
No, Rod, trust us, we're working behind the scenes.
Yeah,
yeah.
We hear that
exactly.
A lot, too.
But you're right, Rod. It has to be highly organized, and in order to be highly organized, the perfect association would be run by highly organized individuals. So when I think of it, I think I just don't want anybody running it. I just don't want anybody starting it. I don't want – and this is horrible. Maybe this sounds bad. For lack of a better term, I don't want nobody to start this up because they won't get anywhere. I think we need people with experience, talking to politicians, experience in the community. We need some people that are known. We need some intelligent people. We need, you know, the, Solomon Friedmans of the world. These guys who have experience, who have knowledge, who have connections. These are the guys that need to start another association. Those types, I mean, it's not that I don't think that somebody with their heart in the right place wouldn't do a good job, but I think you need to be educated and you need to be connected. Otherwise, it's going to take you so much longer to gain any ground. So I think important.
We talked about that. I don't know. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or if we just the three of us were talking about it behind the scenes maybe a month ago. That you know, people who are in the organizations now have worked for years and years and years to develop relationships with bureaucrats and to be known and, you know, all
yes,
that kind
I
of behind
this,
the scenes.
Yeah.
Behind that scenes work. And my point was, with a new organization now, are you going to start at square one again with people who don't know anybody and nobody knows who they are? You know, and then they've got to start that all again. Whereas if you, I think we were talking in relation to new organizations and the NFA. The NFA, you know, they've got connections. They've got people there who know people in the government. Like that, those, that networking, that
web is all
there. But they
also have some burned bridges too.
They've got some burned bridges. So, you know,
A burned bridge might be easier to repair than building a new one, though. Might be. I don't know. I don't know how extensively they're burned. Go ahead.
Yeah. Does a new organization try and recruit the people who have that experience from other organizations? You know what I mean? To try, you know.
Kind of,
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's an option. But yeah, in general, as just in what we're talking about, and to just spin off of what you were saying, Trevor, is that when you start from square one, it's a long road, and I don't know that the gun community has 20 years to.
Well, exactly. You know, exactly. And. What purpose do these associations serve? We always say join both, not one or the other, because although they take a different approach, their only reason for being is to work to help you get more rights, freedoms, and privileges. It's yep. all about coming up with common sense guidelines. I don't even want to use the words restriction. Pro-gun organizations are there to help benefit the pro-gun community and make our lives easier and give us more access and freedoms with our tools and or toys. So this new organization has to begin with that in mind. Hey, we're here to de-restrict a few things and clarify a few things and come up with some legislation that makes sense. So I like what you said, Rod, about here's our goal. Here's our plan to achieve our goal, because a goal without a plan is a wish. And that doesn't do you any good. And if you fail to plan, you can plan to fail. So, and I think, Rod, also, they shouldn't bite off more than they can chew in the beginning.
I think you need another cliche.
I think
you need another one to kind of round us out here.
You're a jerk. Is that a cliche?
That's a good one.
That's a good one? Okay. So, well then, Matthew, I'll put it on you. What do you think the perfect pro-gun organization in Canada would look like?
I think it's definitely going to have to be some sort of merging. Not a physical one, but take the best things from the CSSA and take the best things from the NFA. And that sort of, not a no compromise, but you want an organization that is going to be aggressive and is going to be, it knows what it wants and it's going to communicate. And we've covered those points. It's going to make that communication clear with politicians as well, not just with its members. And then also you do need to have the, not a soft approach, but a friendly approach. You need to have, not an in your face.
Well, you can be friendly without being someone's friend.
That's right. We don't need an in your face sort of my way or the highway. You need a, look, this is the way it's going to have to be. And, you know, you can do that with tact. You can do that with politeness, and you don't need to make enemies. You can do that with friends. And, yep. You know, I just think it's really important that we aren't portrayed gun owners, the community of us, that is, as just a bunch of hard-nosed individuals who
aggressive.
Aren't going to take no for an answer. We need to be portraying ourselves as very polite, friendly, safe, individuals and reasonable, yes. And we do need to be reasonable, unfortunately. I do know, and I'm on board with this camp that says we don't need 99% of the restrictions on firearms that we have in Canada. But I also understand that being realistic, and if we're going to expect to get anything, we're going to have to keep about 80% of them. But if we can get rid of the worst 20%, we could really improve our lives here in Canada.
My understanding, Rod, you were giving your definition of no compromise earlier. Mine was always a little bit different than that, and it came from Sean, actually. And it was, for years, the anti-gunners and the government would come after our entire loaf of bread. Give us the whole loaf. We want all your guns. And we would say, no, you can't have all of it, but here's a slice. So they would take their slice, and they would go away, and they'd be content with that for a while, and then they'd come back, and they'd want the whole loaf again. And we'd fight with them and say, no, you can't have all of it. Here's another slice. And so they were picking us apart one slice at a time. And the notion behind No Compromise was forget it. You can't even have a slice anymore. It wasn't so much that we want to be able to buy full auto machine guns from Shoppers Drug Mart on our noon hour. It wasn't so much that as it was, look, enough, no more. You can't have another iota. Nothing. You're not getting any more of what we've already given you. And as a matter of fact, we're going to start and try and take some stuff back.
Yeah, I mean, I like that analogy, and I think that that's the way it should be, really.
No, and that's right. I've been through that with Sean, too. And that's definitely part of my definition of no compromise. I think where I mentioned the departure was that the goal is, you know, or our stated goal is, oh, yeah, we want the entire Firearms Act gone and no regulations whatsoever and go back to, you know, whatever it was, right, before 1943.
And so that's completely unrealistic and nobody wants to talk to you.
That's right.
Well, this is the thing, right? And Matthew was talking about, well, there's a way to do business with people while being polite, but being – it's called professionalism. If you can just be professional
– I'm not good with big words. No, not at all.
I got the thesaurus on the other computer going. But,
perfect.
Yeah.
Is there another word for that? Because thesaurus doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, there should be another word for thesaurus. You look it up.
If only there was a book. Sorry, Rod. Go ahead.
Sorry. Okay, stand by. I'm looking it up. But, yeah, I mean, I agree completely with that because it's gone so far to the other side. Yeah, not one more inch. But the thing is, for us to regain any rights, there has to be a conversation. I mean, we have to be able to engage in a conversation. And pretty much it was like, call me when you're ready to repeal everything. And I mean, it's like the spoiled child stomping his foot and you're not going to get anything. And I think that's what it was putting to me, what no compromise was by a few elements within the NFA. And I just went, you know, that's just not productive. And, you know, if I'm going to spend my time, which I barely have any as it is, you know, I want to produce something. Right. So that's why I thought, you know, this needs to be, we need to put a little more thought into this thing. One of the biggest things, guys, that I think has been completely neglected by both organizations is the value. And while you see that in my videos, is the value of educational resources for normal Canadians that have had no experience with firearms. And, you know, with the videos that I do on that subject, I'm not actually trying to convert anybody. And I don't know if I've even spelled this out before. I'm not trying to convert anybody into being gun people. I'm just trying to mitigate their opposition because that's really all we need to do. We just need our political parties to go, you know what, I could probably do away with ATTs and, you know, de-restrict the AR because it's like any other rifle and I'm not going to lose power. Because right now, that's what the conservatives are worried about. That's why they didn't go so far. Hey, we finally, after 16 years of building the Reform Party, you know, finally we're here. You know, now we're the Conservative Party of Canada. We're in power. We have a majority. We made some changes. We want another shot at it. Oh, here comes the gun people. We're not throwing away, you know, power to make them happy. We just got to keep them on the hook. So if you minimize the risk that it represents for them by helping spread good knowledge, then I think that would go a long way. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
When I took hunter safety, it was explained that, you know, 80% of the population doesn't hunt. And of that 80%, so many are anti-hunters and so many are on the fence. And you have the power as a hunter to either keep them on the fence or push them to the anti side. More so than the antis have to take them to the anti side. So how you portray yourself as a hunter with your ethics and your behavior and whether or not you're walking out of a convenience store with a six pack and an orange vest on, how you behave and how you portray hunting to those people that are on the fence will determine whether or not they stay on the fence. They're never going to be hunters. Forget it. But they may not go to the anti side. So as long as you don't piss them off, they won't try and mess with your hobby. But if you do something that's negative as a hunter, you may lose them to the anti side. Well, a gun owner is the same thing. We can keep those people that are on the fence. Yeah, sure. I'll get rid of ATTs. What are you talking about? It's a magical piece of paper. You can't convince me that a piece of paper protects public safety, right? If it's explained to them with the right approach, they may not become a gun owner, but they may not care if we lose the ATT.
Absolutely. And I think that's maybe far more savvy approach than screaming and yelling about we want the Firearms Act repealed because you promised us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just saying it's worth considering.
I'll say you're right. I'll go it on.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome. I'll say you're right because I agree with you.
Yeah. You know, it makes
you're
sense
right.
to me.
I must be right. Sorry, Matthew, what was that point you made?
I just said it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it does. And you know, I've made a couple of breakthroughs through, you know, I'm sure you guys saw the man on the street interviews.
I did. Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah. And you know, here's a funny story for you. So the NFA wouldn't put those on the Facebook page.
Why not?
It wasn't theirs? They didn't do
it? No, I will tell you why. Because it sounded like I was advocating licensing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're pro-licensing, says the NFA.
A pro-gun control, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you weren't out there picking fights, so yeah.
Yeah, so... And, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I think that one of the big mistakes, one that needs to be learned from was, you know, we need to temper our ideology. Like I do, you know, even though I appear very reasonable, I have my own ideology too, right? Like I don't want restrictions on anything. In fact, if I continue to get a criminal record check, I won't fight you on that. But once I got my license, it's none of your business what I have.
Yeah.
So to some people, that might seem extreme. You know, like pistols, AR, it doesn't matter. It's none of your business what I have as long as I'm, you know, I play your game and participate in your system.
Well, that brings us back to a gun is a gun. I mean, who cares if your gun is quote-unquote restricted? If you're licensed to own it, what does the government need to know what list of guns you have? I mean, yep. They know you have guns. Who cares what they look like?
And it's mine until you tell me I'm not allowed to have it anymore because I've done something wrong. So
right.
Why do you have to keep charging my license or charging me a license fee every 5 years?
Well, there's that too, yeah.
You know.
Well, and in the inverse, there's a very reasonable and compelling reason why the government shouldn't know what you have, and we saw that last year, right?
Right.
Because they're not.
River.
They've shown that they're not responsible enough to be entrusted with that power, because they'll just like, okay, well, I'm just going to turn everybody into a criminal. I'm not going to tell anybody anything. I'm just going to keep it to myself until someone gets pulled over on the side of the road. And I can put him in jail for 3 years. And, you know, it's a really difficult thing to try to explain to anti-gun people the peril and the danger that we all face all the time illegally just to own firearms, and that it's completely unnecessary. But it has to be done with a very soft touch, because it is, you know, at great expense. There has been a war on personal firearms ownership, and people are, it's like, I call them sleepwalkers, right? You don't want to wake them up too quick or they'll start to panic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need an organization that realizes how to communicate with people and figures out the best, most, you know, cost-effective ways to do that and let's get started kind of thing.
One of the best ways that I have found to get people on the fence or even antis over to my side is to not talk about how unfair the rules are to me and all that stuff. I talk about, we have this restriction and that restriction, and I talk about what is actually out there that they don't even know is out there with regards to laws and regulations.
A lot of people think that it's a lot easier in Canada. A lot of people think it's a lot harder than it is, too, but a lot of people don't know that we actually need an ATT to take our gun to the range. A lot of people just don't know that. And when you tell them, the background checks every day, you know, all these different safety protocols that are in place, like quote-unquote safety, of course. They're like, well, maybe it's okay then.
Yep. When Christina's teacher friends are over here for a staff party and I say, hey, if she goes to school on Monday morning with a black eye, you know you can have my guns taken away before I even know what's happening, before you even know how she got the black eye. What? Really? Yeah. Public safety concern.
We're under way more scrutiny than the average Joe Blow, that's for sure.
Well, and interesting, you guys are saying pretty much what I said in those videos, and that's why it was ideologically unsavory to post those videos, because it almost said, hey, these are good things. And the ideology got in the way of us actually moving forward and sharing those videos and converting other people, or even showing other people that might not have those sales skills to convert others, right? Like it's a multi-pronged approach, even just with one piece of media like a video, right?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, because our government's not doing it. Our government is talking about cutting moose in half with an AK-47.
I see that constantly. Yeah, every time I go outside, someone's just sawing a moose in half with an AK-47. When will this madness stop?
I know. I hate that. What a waste of meat. Well, that's good, Rod. I think we've scratched the surface, and it might be something that we need to revisit. But I think for now we can put it aside and move on. And we certainly appreciate you coming on here tonight and sharing your thoughts on this topic. And I don't think it's a topic that's going to go away anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And so if you're willing, we'd like to revisit with you at some time in the future.
Anytime.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Rod.
All right, I'm going to jump off now. I've got to go get that pink GSG and go to the range, throw a bunch of tactical gear on, and run around with a pink handgun.
Sounds
like right.
Sounds like Owen's trips.
When it comes to parenting, I think we can all agree you're doing it right.
I would concur. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Rod. We'll talk to you again sometime soon, I hope.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
And now on to some listener feedback. Trevor, do you want to take this first one?
Yes, I do, because it's two sentences.
Yes, that's, I thought of you as soon as I saw it.
You're so generous and kind. You're and hardly condescending at all. Like when Matthew does it, I feel like it's been condescending, but not this time. Very eloquent.
Huh.
This one, yeah, that's all right, Matthew. Huh. You get over it. Blue dress, Matthew, blue dress. Okay, now I got to tell the story. So I call Matthew almost every day on the way home from work, right, because it's a long, boring drive. So all 10 minutes of it. Anyway, so I get in the house, and I'm like, oh, God, I got to hurry up. I got some stuff to do. We're going out. We're doing some things, and my kitchen is a mess. I got to clean it. And he says, Matthew, can I even tell the story?
I don't care. Go for it. So it was very tongue-in-cheek, so you know, go ahead.
Very.
I'm saying that now because
yeah,
I have
yeah.
to.
Now, yeah, because I have to. Yeah. He says, I said, oh, my kitchen is a mess, and I got to clean it. He says, yeah, well, my kitchen's a mess too, but I have an excuse. My wife doesn't live with me during the week. Oh, so I'm like, that's funny. That's probably the fifth funniest thing you've ever said. Your kitchen's a mess because your wife doesn't live with you. Anyway, so the conversation goes on and on. I'm like, all right, look, I got to go clean the kitchen. And he just says, so what color dress are you wearing? So I give him the old Brian Bolivar disconnect.
Yes, he did. He just hung right up on him. That was that. There was
and
this
hour
click.
Later, an hour later, I sent him a text with the word blue. Nothing. And then he replies, 32? Like, hut. No, man. So I just let it go. And then I was like, by the way, the word blue was in reference to the color of my dress. So this carried on for 3 hours.
So far. And yeah. I don't expect it to slow down anytime soon.
No, we're done. I took the blue dress off and the kitchen's not clean.
All right.
Wow. All right. So
what a rabbit hole.
Yeah. This first one comes to us from Kevin L. He says, hey, guys, do we need to register for the charity shoot? No. I will need an invite letter so I can bring my ACR for filthy and some handguns. What do you mean for filthy? I'm the one that's thinking about buying one and going the whole non-restricted route. And this ACR, by the way, was a non-communist purchase, just in case the listeners were wanting.
Ooh.
It came from the Calgary Shooting Center. If you don't shop there, you're
very
communist.
Good.
Yeah. And he also took it to the Appleseed, so it's yeah. awesome.
So, no, you don't need to register, but a letter of invite. By the time you listen to the show, will have been posted on Facebook page, and for those of you who are not Facebookers, on slamfireradio.com. It'll be right in the middle of the upper part of the page. It'll say, letter of invite to charity shoot. Click on that, print it off, Bob's your uncle.
Or Robert's your father's brother.
You nailed it. Thank you, Kevin.
Oh,
thank you for bringing that to our attention, and we appreciate that.
Okay. Wait a second. Does that mean Kevin's coming to the charity shoot?
Looks like it.
Awesome.
Well, in an effort for me to talk even less on the show, Matthew would like to take this next one.
Excuse me.
Roger that. All right. This one comes to us from Grant. He says, guys, I think we should take a minute to give a nod to the Armed Squirrels. They seem to have converted New Shooter Canada, Modern Rifleman Radio, and to some degree Slam Fire and possibly others into Appleseed Radio. Huh?
Never.
Never.
We all got a little bit of Appleseed Radio in us.
I think so. Appleseed's pretty cool. Anyway, if the Bancroft, Ontario event works out, I think this might spread like wildfire across Canada. Does anybody else find it kind of funny that there is a town called Bancroft in Ontario?
In Bantario?
In Bantario. They love
I think it's
band
fitting.
Things. Oh, very. He continues on, I have been a fan and student of sling-supported rifle shooting for a few years now, and all this Appleseed talk has got me convinced on the value of this training. As such, I have signed up for the Ontario Maple Seed and will make the 9-hour drive down. Since signing up, I have realized that I don't have a semi-auto 22. Seems like a great opportunity for buying a new gun. I think I want to go full-blown Appleseed with this gun and get a Marlin 795 with tech sights. Matthew, could you suggest a retailer that might have them in stock? I checked at the Ontario dealer I have dealt with in the past, Elwood Epps, and they don't have any. Then I called the Calgary Shooting Center, told them I wasn't a communist, but unfortunately they still didn't have any 795s.
Well, that makes them a communist.
I guess so. If I can, I would like to avoid buying it from a big box store website. Alternatively,
so much for my suggestion.
Alternatively, do any listeners have a previously enjoyed 795 that they are willing to part with?
And not a Remlin.
Not a Remlin. Also, well, that being said, I have two Remlins, and they do work just fine. They're not the best fit and finish, but they do work.
Oh, I thought your first one was pre-Remlin.
My very first one was, but then that one went away, and I got two at the same time, and they were both Remlins. However, they do still work fine. Owens works fantastically. I mean, they are putting together good 795s now.
Explain Remlin just real quick.
Remington bought...
And then explain the word fantastically.
No, that one... That,
is there
like,
much flipperosity like, in a Remlin?
Yeah, like flipperosity, fantastically is remaining a word. However, Remlin is a term for the firearms that were produced during the Remington takeover of Marlin. And allegedly, as the stories and folklore have gone, some of the staff were not happy with the takeover and some sabotage ensued, causing some very low-quality firearms to go out for a while. How true that is, I don't know. I only mention it because I heard it at a rumor mill once. So there you have it.
Yeah, anyway, swears by it.
Anyway, so yeah. You know, I have heard it from some pretty
repeated with the fact that Remington took it over.
That's right. So Remington took it over. And so they called that sort of takeover line of guns Remlins, as kind of alluding to the fact that they are lower in quality and not very good. From what I hear, I don't know much about the other ones, but I do know the 795 line has improved drastically since that happened. Owens rifle looks great. Yeah, that's sort of where that came from. So, continuing on with Grant's letter, he says, also, can you find the 795 tech sites in Canada? I've not had any luck yet. I would like to get them from the Appleseed store, but it does not look like they ship to Canada. I'll let you guys decide if this email is worth reading. Clearly it is. I'm just really looking for some advice. Please, Slamfire, help me buy another gun. Cheers, Grant. Yes, Grant, we will help you. Trevor's suggestion, I know what it was going to be, I think, is unfortunately mine as well. I spent about an hour online today looking for a smaller retail store that had the 795s in stock. I know that my local gun store has them. I know that there are some local gun stores in Owens area that has them, but none of them, as far as I'm aware, ship or have online stores. So you're probably going to have to go to Cabela's. Cabela's.ca usually has a pretty good price on them. They do ship fairly quickly. I just don't know where else to suggest looking, just because I scoured the internet as best I could. Any listeners who know where he can get one online, that's not a big box store, just send a comment on our Facebook page or send us an email real quick and we can forward it on to him. But otherwise, I think Cabela's.ca is your best bet. As for the tech sites in Canada, again, I did not find any. I looked. I couldn't find them. Maybe I just looked in the wrong spot. They will come to Canada from somebody. Somebody in the States will ship those to Canada. Look at Brown Owls.
Check Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon, eBay, those sorts of things. I'm sure you can get them. And if you're going to go peep sites, that's the way to go on a 795, is those tech sites. They work great. So
yeah, my suggestion for where was going to, I know both of the green diamonds, one in Woodstock and the one in Moncton, both have them in stock.
Right. So if you have a green diamond locally, Grant, you could check there, or maybe check and see if they sell them online.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really sure what they do on for online sales, but I do know if you go to greendiamond.ca, you can click Woodstock, you know, the Woodstock Green Diamond, and it has like their phone number and stuff, and you could just call them and say, hey, I want to buy a firearm. I can't find them anywhere else. Would you be willing to ship? And you never know. They're a small little place. They very well may ship it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yep.
Cool.
And tell them I sent you.
That's
even
right.
Even though that will have no bearing whatsoever on your firearm, and they'll probably go, who? Yeah. But you can still tell them.
Make the communist joke. Who knows?
Yeah. You never know.
Owen told me if I don't order from Green Diamond and Woodstock, I'm a communist. And they'd be like, Owen who? Owen from Slamfire. Oh, that Owen.
Slam what now?
They'll still go, who?
So, anyway, thanks, Grant, for the email. And I wish you good luck in finding your gun and sights. And have fun at that maple seed. I don't think I'll be able to make it to that. It's a, you know, it's more than a 9-hour drive for me. Let's just say that. But... you know, like I said before, I'm looking forward to going to an Appleseed maybe in Maine this year, so very good.
Good. All right, well, that is all the email for the show. If you would like to send us an email so that we can have more than two per show.
That way Owen gets to read one, too.
I lucked out this week. You can send it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. And iTunes,
nope.
I don't see any here. No iTunes reviews this week.
This week.
So clearly the listeners hate us this week.
Clearly.
So shout outs.
I have a request. I don't want to trade guns with you like Matthew does, which is a cool idea, by the way. But I am.
Trevor wants to take something for nothing.
No, I didn't. Where does it say that? It doesn't say that. The word please does not imply free.
What?
It's true. Doesn't.
My mom said please, but she never made me pay for my supper. Like,
no. Okay, there you go. I have primers and projectiles and powder to load 1,000 rounds of 44 Magnum, but I am in desperate need of brass. So if you have any 44 Magnum or even 44 Special brass that you would be willing to sell me, please contact me. You can do it through Facebook or trevorfrillot@gmail.com. And let me know if you have some brass for sale. And, yeah, we'll try and
I know someone who has all kinds of 44 brass.
Really?
But he said he wasn't going to give it to the likes of you, so.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
did he say he'd sell it to the likes of me?
No.
Okay. Now, I didn't say I was going to pay much for this stuff. I just said I was looking for it.
Yeah. All right. So, anybody who has 44 brass and wants to dump it, now you know where to send it to.
And trade. I could trade some stuff.
There you go.
I got brass I can trade.
I got a bunch of 22.
He's got a Model 29 he might trade for.
No.
I got a bunch of 22 casings, Trev. Can't you just shove two of those into a die to make a 44?
I really don't think you understand how reloading works.
I'm pretty sure 22 and 22 makes 44. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Off of each other.
I don't know. You might want to look into that.
All right, good. Well, let's finish this train wreck. Check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcasts.com. Join our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook and all of that other stuff that we usually say.
And if this is your first time listening, I guess you'll have to go back and figure out what that stuff is.
Well, that was actually the end, yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to go back and listen, yeah, basically.
Here's the incentive to go like us on Facebook. For all of you people who are lazy and haven't gone and done that, I'm not going to tell you how many likes we have. You have to go look at how many likes we have, so then you can like us while you're already there. How's that sound?
Like a game.
That's a great plan.
Yeah.
What do you win? Nothing.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the end of the show. So, goodbye.
Goodbye. See you next week.
Go ahead. Make my day.
So, if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now, go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Oh, so we're just going to record the main segment and then keep going.
Yeah, just like we normally do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing you told him that, Trevor. Otherwise, it would have been, hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 101.
I know. He was off getting scotch.
Which would have been funny had we let him do that. It could have been outtakes. Owen, what are you doing, man?
So if, am I to understand that I'm not going to be part of What Did You Do With Guns This Week?
Well, you could be during...
You can be. That's up to you. We just didn't figure you wanted to stick around for potentially 90 minutes of the entire show, but if you're cool with that, I mean,
you want to do the whole show, Rod?
Well, I could probably do, you know, the What Did You Do With Guns, and then we could just bust into the main. I'm not here to rearrange your thing. Don't get me wrong, but and then I can bolt whenever you guys are.
We could just record the show in the right order and just keep him until after the main topic. Cut him loose to email and then go from there. We could do that.
Yeah. Well, normally, let me tell you what we often do, Rod. If we have somebody on the show who's either a podcaster or a YouTuber that's kind of familiar with this format and they're kind of into the gun community and whatnot, we usually invite them on for the whole show. But we figured, you know, do we want to like really bother Rod that long? So it's entirely up to you. You can hang out with us for the hour and a half, or we can just pick your brain and have a little interview and cut you loose. It's whatever you want to do.
It sounds like he wants to do what he did with guns this week, so I say we keep him for that.
Yeah. I think he probably did something really cool.
I think so.
To get it on.
And this is how it's going to play out. So, Rod, what did you do with this week in guns? Oh, I didn't really do much, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. Nothing.
All right. Well, let's...
All right, then, Owen, you can kick us off in the regular fashion, then.
Okay. So I guess I'll introduce him and then
you do whatever you want. You're lead host. You're the boss.
Oh yeah. 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 I know how doing whatever I want works.
That's right.
Yeah. I do whatever I want until I do it the way you don't want it done. And then you cut me off.
I just hang up on you. We carry on.
Now let us tell you how it's going to be. You're going to introduce yourself. We'll introduce ourselves. Then you'll introduce Rod.
Okay. Maybe I'll introduce him before you, because I think I like him more than you guys.
That's fine. I wasn't even supposed to be here, so let's go.
Awkward.
If it wasn't for awkward moments, Rod, we wouldn't have any.
There wouldn't be a show, really.
Yeah, there would be no moments if there wasn't awkward moments.
Hilarious. Oh,
yeah, starting,
let's go.
Okay, well, shut up.